Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Welcome everyone to a new episode of our podcast. Today with us is Denise Voss. She is the chairwoman of LuxFlag and one of the panelists at the event that launched the campaign that Know Thy Brand, my company, and The Loft here in Luxembourg have designed to support women, women in technology and women in finance particularly. Welcome, Denise. Can you just introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about yourself, where you come from and your background?
Thanks, Julia. Yes, it's a long journey. Hard to believe it's been almost 31 years since I've been in Luxembourg.
Wow.
Came for 2 years and stay forever. This is my motto. I think I have a tendency to stick to things. So I'm American and went to university in Boston and then worked there in the accounting auditing world. And then I came over for a 2-year exchange with the then Coopers & Lybrand, which is now PricewaterhouseCoopers. And it was the beginning of UCITS investment funds in Europe. And so Luxembourg was interested in hiring somebody with mutual fund experience, because obviously the US is a mutual fund, has had a long-standing mutual fund industry. So I came to Luxembourg. I wanted to speak French. In the United States, often you learn a language, but you never really have a chance to speak a language. So I wanted to basically use all those years of study that I had in high school and even younger. And so I checked Luxembourg, I checked France and Paris. People thought I think I was crazy to choose Luxembourg, but I think it was a great decision. So here I am 31 years later. I moved to Franklin Templeton Investments in Luxembourg after 5 years with Coopers & Lybrand in Luxembourg. And then I just finished up with Franklin Templeton after 25 years. I told you I have a tendency to stick to things. And now I'm currently an independent non-executive director for investment funds. Not very original, but it's really exciting work, especially when it comes to what's happening in the sustainable finance sphere. And I actually had the honor to be quite involved with ALFI, the fund association, and ended up being chairwoman of ALFI, actually chairman at the time, but it was chairwoman at the time at ALFI. And then also had the honor of joining LuxFlag as the chairwoman of the board back in 2019. So I've been primarily focused on sustainable finance through LuxFlag, but also, as I said, I see quite a lot of that in my investment fund mandates. Very exciting to be moving finance forward and making finance sustainable.
I think it's brilliant. I mean, this is something very important, very critical today. I think there's more attention to it than has ever been before, medical responsibilities as well. But it's great to see a change. And, and it's great also to see your change from chairman, chairwoman. That's something that we talked about during the panel. It means that changes are happening and that maybe, hopefully, we are heading towards the right direction. And you certainly represent a role model for a lot of other women that are starting a career in a field that is traditionally male dominated. So it's amazing to see someone, you know, that can lead the way and be a woman as opposed to be a traditional man leading the way.
There have been a number of women in chairwoman, chairperson positions in the financial sector. And there's obviously a lot of women starting out as auditors, lawyers, working in accountants, et cetera, working, coming from university. But I think the challenge, as we discussed at the event as well, is how do you get women to go to the next level? How do we get middle management, the ranks of middle management, to be much more balanced in terms of men and women, and then obviously also in the, you know, the executive roles in companies and in our industry. Yeah,
exactly. I think that Darren, which will join us in the next episode, will talk about exactly the broken rug and how come we have this diaspora of women, and we all start pretty much with an even number of, especially in finance, more than technology, an even number of men and women entry level, and then something happens and the women disappear, the men progress in the career faster. Which brings us to one of the topics that was raised during the event, which was about, well, women don't tend to be as brave or put their hands up as much as men when it comes to career progression. And you share with me an incredible TED talk, which really will stay with me forever, which I would like you to talk a bit about with us today.
Sure, happy to. Yes, so the founder of Girls Who Code in the United States is a woman named Reshma Saujani. Reshma Saujani, and she has a wonderful TED talk back from a couple of years ago, actually, where she talks about how it took her till age 30 or something to that effect to actually do something brave. She ran for political office, but she talks, basically the premise is that we're raising our girls to be perfect and raising our boys to be brave. So she cites examples such as, you know, as you rightly said, Julia, we all start out on the same level with the same advantages, etc., boys and girls. And however, why is it that after a certain age in school, girls are no longer doing well in mathematics, for instance? It really doesn't really make sense. But when we're talking about careers, she uses as an example of Hewlett-Packard's study where it showed that on average, boys will apply for a job if they meet 60%, so 60% of the requirements, but girls will apply for the job if they meet 100% of the requirements, which is pretty astonishing, actually, but just showing that in Reshma Saujani's mind, this is an example of, again, girls are raised to be perfect and not taking a risk, basically, unless everything is right and perfect and tied up, etc. But then her premise is that we're socializing women, you know, to be perfect instead of brave, and we should obviously change that and socialize women to be, and girls and women to be brave. One of the things I mentioned at the event as well is it's important to be brave, but it's also important to understand that the implication of being brave is, of course, you could fail.
Exactly.
However, that isn't life-threatening generally when it comes to a job or a project or something, you know, to that effect. And of course, you can learn from your mistakes and do better the next time, which is, of course, what she's talking about when she says that boys are raised to be brave, because she basically says boys are used to climbing on the, you know, the equipment in the playground and jumping off of it, and learning from that. But so very early learning, taking risks and learning from those risks. You can obviously take calculated risks. It's important to take calculated risks, but nonetheless, we should be open to taking risks, because again, that's how you learn.
Absolutely, and what I love of her story is that when she tells how she was brave to, you know, to enter the politics, and then she concludes saying, and by the way, I didn't win. And that didn't break her. And I think there is a lot of association between you know, a woman that fails is a failure as a person, rather than a woman or a person fails simply as at the failure in her career, in her startup, or in. That's also why women are, you know, cannot maybe to start enterprises as much as men, although that is changing recently. But because again, there is that association of failure with the person, with the individual, rather than the thing that failed.
No, you're right, and you're right. I think women do have a tendency, I'll raise my hand there too, to take failure or what we perceive to be failure personally, when sometimes projects or what have you fail, you know, in spite of your best efforts and due to some external circumstances, so that are beyond your control. So it is difficult, I have to say, not to take these things personally. But I also think that you learn to not take them personally by doing them, hopefully not having too many failures. I think part of it is also that there's an element of experience. I mean, I have been around for a while, and I have to admit that while I try not to tell my daughter that about my experience, but you gain life experience as you get older, and that's why, for instance, I know it's something that we'll talk about. That's why mentoring is such a fantastically fulfilling activity for me, I have to say, because you do get to actually share the benefit of your experience, not to tell people what to do, but just to say, look, this is what I've found, take it or leave it, but you might want to consider that.
Oh, I love that. And we will get into mentoring in a second, but I love exactly what you said, that we can only learn. The important thing is to learn from our mistakes or from what happens, and our mistake was an external factor. But also, I think, Alice, this is what I say to my children, if you don't try hard, if you don't try new things, you're not even going to experience the happiness of succeeding. Because, you know, when you push yourself out there and, you know, okay, can I do it? Will I do it? And you give yourself, obviously, you need to give 100%. It's not just saying, oh, I'm going to apply for a job if I'm completely unqualified, and then say, oh, well, you know, try really hard. But then when you get there, you're like, oh, my God, I've done this. That's me. And nobody can take it away from you. And even if you don't succeed, like one of my mentees, so we're going to go there soon, she was very concerned recently about review. After 6 months, she didn't hit the target. She was in a sales position. And despite her best efforts, she got recognized for a lot of things, but she didn't get the numbers in. So she was very stressed the day before. So we had a little chat. And I said to her, look, whatever happens, apart from I think that you've done such a great job, they will keep you. And I was right. But apart from that, like, whatever happens to you, nobody can take away what you've done in these 6 months, how much you've learned, how much you've tried. You gave 100%. And, you know, that is yours. Nobody can take it away. Now, it didn't work. Okay, what have you learned? What you're going to do differently? Maybe that's not your kind of job. Me, personally, could never do sales. Like, you know, so it doesn't define you again as a person if it doesn't go ahead. You still had 6 months of a high-paid job, and you learn a lot. And you take the next challenge. Obviously, she did very well because she's a great person, but it's really owning your efforts and owning your challenging yourself, I think, is something very important.
Yeah, I know. And it does come back to that perfection issue, isn't it? Doesn't it as well? Yeah, no, agreed. I agree with you. And again, learning, I think you really hit the nail on the head there with, you know, learning. It should be about learning. Every effort you make, every new project or job should be about learning. So, and, you know, learning aspects, obviously technical aspects, but also personal, interpersonal aspects. But it's hard. But obviously, if you're young and you know, it's difficult if you haven't had that many experiences. It's challenging to know that, without some advice or mentoring experience or what have you.
Exactly, and that's why we need mentors and we need sponsors. And that's something I know you are really adamant about. Before we talk about that, can you give in your words what would be the definition of sponsoring and mentoring? And why we talk about this in the context of supporting gender inclusion, and then how companies can go around that. But first,
Well, I mean, certainly a mentor is somebody who gives a mentee, shares knowledge, again, shares experiences, and also listens. Obviously, that's the key thing there, and can provide some guidance based on experience or based on somebody just having a different perspective. I'm sure a mentor-mentee relationship where both individuals are in the same business or company or in the same department, I'm sure that can be useful, but I wonder if it's not even sometimes more useful if it's someone who's not so closely connected to the person. But in any case, I'm sure that even that can work. And I know companies, there are more and more companies that have that kind of mentor-mentee program, formal programs, but obviously it doesn't have to be formal. It can be informal as well. And then what they say that the sponsor is sort of a super mentor, if you will, but really a sponsor is becomes an advocate really for the mentee, who then becomes what they call the protege. So and I think what's interesting there, and as it says, the sponsor is really putting themselves out there for the person who that they're sponsoring. Even putting their reputation on the line, if you will, to a certain extent, because generally a sponsor will say, like, for instance, for me, my colleague at Franklin Templeton, after 10 years of being on the ELFI board, he said, Denise, I've been on the board for 10 years. And effectively he said, it's your turn to put yourself forward, which which was obviously, I appreciated fantastic. I mean, so much. Because it's obviously a huge, it was a huge step and a huge act and a huge step that I something I had to step up to. That's for sure. Had to be brave about. But the fact that he did this was obviously one reason why I'm here today.
But I think they are very important because going back to the fact they said that people in the same industry on the same. Field helps. I think a mentoring and especially sponsoring also the mentors really have an important role in providing that extra confidence that because of the way women are raised, I mean, it works for men as well. I mean, as I said during the event, I have a mentor that is a man and a mentee that is a man. So it's not actually, I think it's sometimes having different perspectives is very good. And none of them actually work in my sector. Important to provide to provide the support that we sometimes we lack ourselves. Someone else says, you can do it. What are you talking about? You can do it. This is your moment. Go for it. And I think we really need it.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking back to when I started with a company, and I remember that I came from an environment where people just get together and have lunch, and obviously over lunch, you have discussions about everything and anything and everything, sometimes important, sometimes not important, but it is an opportunity, those discussions sometimes, to learn and to get to know people better that then you can obviously get to know and even from a professional point of view, work with later. And I remember that this one particular company I worked with, I noticed that it was always the guys having lunch and they never, ever asked a woman. It was interesting, I have to say. Lonely at the top.
Yeah,
as well, because it's not just the male, female. It's also maybe, and that was an era thing. It was also, women, senior executive women aren't necessarily, I don't know, maybe it would have been easier if I had been a more junior person.
You think so? I know, like I'm reading a lot and there is on the topic and there is a problem of a lot of decision or discussion happen outside the office hours.
Exactly.
And now if you take a mom, for instance, with the young children, it's more difficult for a mom to stay on for drinks after work, for instance. Mm-hmm. I remember in one of the companies I worked when I was in the corporate world, we would do this fantastic Christmas event. We were in Australia and everybody, it was a nationwide company, so everybody was coming from the different cities, the different states. Only once a year, basically, we had the chance to meet all together. I worked there from February, so the first time I met someone or the rest of the team outside Sydney was December. Great event. We spent 3 days together. Amazing experience. Really, I got to know people, was fantastic for my career progression. But I knew that there were mom with young children that couldn't attend because you can't leave the family with 3 days with, if you have a baby or you can, but it becomes a lot more complicated than for men. And so all of these conversations that happen outside, then we need to find a way to get the women involved in them. I'm not saying to stop them because that's silly. it's nice to have chats, but how can we make this chat a bit more inclusive and make sure that women can be part of them?
I mean, the good news is that even though there still is a lot of work to do in terms of parity, gender parity in senior levels or mid-management senior levels, there are more. And it is a lot easier now to network with peers who are women, which is, you're not anymore the only woman in the room.
Exactly. I've been there. I'm sure you have been there. It is a bit of at times can be a bit intimidating, I find, or at least I found when I was younger. Now, again, you get older, you get a bit more experience, you get more people around you that look like you, because, as I say, things are changing and there are more women in stable position. But again, when you are the one, and it doesn't apply to men, to women only, even men, if they are the only one in a situation, where they feel the outsider, it makes it a bit more difficult.
Yeah.
That brings us again back to the mentor, because the mentor can be there to support physically or just can be there to support morally and say, you're going to go to that event, even if you're the only woman, you're going to stand there. You're going to get a babysitter for that, because it's important for you to be there. While my natural say, oh, that's okay, I'll do it next year, or, that's okay.
There's the bravery element again.
Exactly. The bravery element to say, it's easier to say, I can't come, it's fine. You just tell me if anything important is said, you just let me know. Instead to actually.
But it is a good point, because I have to admit, being chairing ALFI, I was asked to speak at a number of events focusing on diversity and women in financial services, et cetera. And so I was often asked for to give us some advice. And certainly the networking element is extremely important, and obviously can be done in many different ways. It can be through volunteering, it can be professional associations, it can be any of the above, or obviously other areas as well, but just getting involved in networking, not doing too much, because obviously that's it is important, actually, because you don't want to be just sort of flitting about from one thing to another. It is important to, but also I would say also pick something that you're interested in, because I think people can generally see when someone is interested and when they're not. Interested.
Exactly. I personally am a big fan of networking. I love connecting people as well. So networking for me is not just about me and who I met, but you do this, that person does something.
Oh, I love that too.
Yeah.
I love that, putting people together. So for me personally, taking on deciding to put myself forward to be chairman of ALFI, that was a big step for me, because I usually was a behind the scenes kind of person, as you say, connecting people. And I love doing that actually as well. But so that was my personal, something I had to, a hurdle I had to jump over and just take a leap about. And because it wasn't something I was used to doing.
Exactly.
Leading.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, no, we don't just have to do the things that are natural to us. I would never become an entrepreneur if I just had follow my own advice, because it's like, for me, it was a lot of stress, but we need to take a little bit of that leap of faith and see what's next. And so, and that is something that I think that's why, to me, you are really a role model for the next generation, because you're not shy away from saying, well, it wasn't natural to me, I had to make myself, I had a mentor, I had a sponsor, and I had to work on myself to take that leap. And that's something that we always need to remember, because otherwise, we look at these amazing women up there and we're like, oh, but they are amazing, I will never be like you. I think it's very important that you tell us that also for you wasn't it natural. I mean, it was natural, it came out very well back in the end, but it was something you had to work on, and I think you might remember this.
For sure. And obviously it's, I learned so many different things. I learned, obviously, the, one of the big things, and they say that, don't they say that the biggest fear that people have, okay, obviously we're not talking about life and death kinds of things, but the biggest fear that people have is public speaking in public, right?
Yeah.
Is what they say. But So, I mean, I have to admit, it's really a gift. I mean, I know I worked hard to do it, but it's really a gift, actually, to not have that fear anymore. Now, what is helpful is I'm not one of these people who can just stand up and speak like that. I know how it works for me. I have to plan, prepare, and practice my three P's. But I've learned different elements along the way. And I think being open to learning as well. So I actually think in many ways, you know, women are well prepared actually to do well at all of this, because I think women tend to be somewhat open, not somewhat, but often very open to learning. Can I do this better? So like maybe the other side of the coin for the perfection challenge is that we do actually try to improve and are, again, open to improving. I have to admit that I actually find it fun now.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure there are people out there who would say she must be out of her mind to think public speaking is fun. I do actually find it fun. Again, yeah. If it's a topic I know about and I enjoy and passionate about. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I kind of like you, Rocky. I remember the first time I had to speak in public and, you know, in Australia, in English, and my English was not quite there yet. I remember that my poor then current husband, had to listen to me repeating the same presentation. I don't know how many times. Is that okay? But what I say to my students, because I used to teach at university before moving to Luxembourg, and I push a lot of public speaking for them as a skill that I think they should acquire. I always say to them, look, even if your legs are shaking or your palms are sweating, most of the time people don't actually realize that. You just, if you are prepared, you will go. You know, you go with the flow. Even if your mind gets blank because you are too, you know, agitated, your mouth will follow. It will go because you have prepared yourself. So as long as you prepare, exactly what you said, as long as you prepare, and don't stop thinking about, oh, what people will see, what people, don't worry about it. You know, mm-hmm. it's something you know, something you want to share. It's an opportunity. So take it. I used to make my students stand up in class and just practice public speaking. Learn when you are, you know, 18 amongst your peers, it's then much easier than.
Oh, true. No, I have to admit, I saw that in the United States. I have to admit, in school, growing, even in university, frankly, we were not at all really then, way back then, not required or encouraged or required to speak in public, which is, but then when my daughter was born in Luxembourg and went to, for part of her school career, she went to the French system here in Luxembourg and until she was 13. And I was amazed at how early they were required to stand up and speak in front of the class, which is fantastic.
Look, I just wanted to ask you one final question. And that is, as a role model, as a mom, as a successful businesswoman, what would be something you would say to a young woman entering now, starting an hour career?
I guess I would say be ready to work hard. I think that's important. Do something that interests you. I think we heard some interesting comments from the speakers the other day about trying different. That's probably more as you go through your career, but trying different careers. You know, and again, I would say, you know, if you see something that's interesting to you, a project, even if you don't feel like you're an expert or anywhere near an expert, raise your hand, get involved, network, seize the opportunity. And don't worry about it too much if you get looks or comments, what's she doing here or whatever. It's, you know, they're, you know, that's too bad for them. They say that, and it doesn't matter.
Absolutely, I love this. You know, it's their loss. It's their loss, and you know, we know our own worth, and we shouldn't care about what. Shouldn't it come from what other people think about?
And it could be an incentive, even to show them. But I think the networking is important as well. And the good news is, you've got a lot of great women out there that you can network, a lot more than in the past. Not that you shouldn't network with men, of course, but
I think that's a very good point to finish off. So we network with women, is, I personally find it very important for my career, for instance. When I was transitioning from Singapore to the UK, I wasn't sure if it continued my company, because I just started from scratch. It was being with women that really gave me the strength, finding other female entrepreneurs that have families and they could do it. And I remember saying, well, if they can do it, well, I can do it. You know, it gave me that strength, but as well, not just close yourself to a world that doesn't include men, because otherwise it becomes us, that we are not inclusive. You know, we all learn from each other. I always say inclusion is only real when we all work together. Otherwise, we're, you know. But yeah, there is a strength of finding women to network with and other men.
Exactly. No, it's true that when you're in a room where there's parity, men and women, and obviously other kinds of diversity, it's just a different experience. And there are many, many more possibilities and opportunities and possibilities in there. Wow. And you just see the way people engage with each other. They're much more natural and open to make comments or suggestions. Whereas if you're the lone woman or lone man, I suppose, in a room full of the opposite, it's just not the same atmosphere. And obviously, you know, we obviously haven't talked about why diversity is good for companies, but of course, having an open environment where people can make suggestions and feel that they can contribute, it's obviously much healthier and ultimately better for a company than an environment that's not like that.
I use it for experience, I'm sure. So you've seen the benefit. This is something that research tells us, but you've seen it firsthand, the importance of the research. Okay, well, thank you so much for finding the time to join us today and for the panel. Honestly, it's been a fantastic honor for us to listen from you. Honestly, it's really, really inspiring. And this is the kind of story we need to hear. This kind of experience, because as I said, there's such an element of reality. So it's not something out there. It's not just looking at someone and say, oh, wow, we'll never be like you. You actually inspire us to start the journey that can get us where you are today. So thank you so much for finding a time to join us.
Well, thank you, Julia. Well done to you as well. Huh? I'm impressed.
Thank you.
I'm sure you do a great job with anything you do, I should say.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
And stop.